Captain Lawrence Zai, she said. Hobbs recognized in her accent the long vowels of Legis 15's far northern provinces. Yes, and your name? Zai answered. It had never occurred to Hobbs that she would have one. Heard. Her accent slipped into some native phonology, and the vowel was inflected by a buzz at the back of the woman's throat. And you have a message for me. From Alexander. Good God, thought Hobbs, the compound mind had a name. Zai just nodded. What is it? The commando cocked her head as if listening to something, then shifted inside the straitjacket, rolling her shoulders. Alexander wishes to give you a weapon. A weapon? Zai asked, finally unable to keep surprise from his voice. Technology? No, Captain. Information, she said. To use against the Emperor. Fair raised the shock remote. You see, Captain? She has classified information. Zai was silent for a moment, stunned by the Rixwoman's words. Hobbs glanced toward Private Basiritz. The commando might be trying to create a moment of confusion before launching an attack, and the old initiate would never react quickly enough to stop her. The Marine seemed completely alert, however. He was shutting out the words. His eyes were fixed on the commando fiercely, as if she were some childhood monster come to life. Hobbs swallowed, and again touched the shape of her flechette pistol through the wool of her sleeve. I am the Emperor's servant, Zai said. He is afraid of us, and he will destroy us if he can, the Rixwoman said. Us? Zai asked. You and... The Lynx and Alexander. Us. We are bound together now. Captain Zai placed his palms together. The Emperor knows no fear, he began the catechism. Not even death. A lie, Herd said quietly. Fair made a noise as if she'd been struck with something. Silence, the initiate cried. Captain, you must secure this room immediately. The captain glared at the prisoner. Hobbs thought for a moment that Zai would turn and leave the madwoman in her lonely cell. However much the past months had changed him, Zai was still appalled by her blasphemy. But instead he took a deep breath. Of what is the Emperor afraid? Lawrence Zai asked, his jaw clenched with the effort of the calumnious words. He has a secret, Herd said, which Alexander discovered on Legis. If this information became known, it would destroy his power. Silence! The initiate shrieked, again flinching as if the words were dealing her physical blows, both her hands clenched around the remote. The Rixwoman's form jerked horribly to attention within the straitjacket. She toppled against the wall and slid down to the floor, her body as stiff as a statue, her face frozen in a terrible rictus. Listen, Zai, she hissed, her accent becoming flat and Rixian. The dead are... Then the collar overwhelmed the Rixwoman, her body thrashing like a corpse animated with electrical shocks. Private, the captain said quietly. Basiritz adjusted his own remote, and the shock collar released the commando. Initiate Fair dropped to her knees, holding her head and shaking as if she'd been shocked as well. Hobbs ignored the initiate and took a few steps toward the prisoner. She knelt, still a meter away, and looked into the commando's now slack face. Saliva bubbled from her lips. She was breathing, at least. Hobbs glared back at Fair. Silence, the political insisted again, her voice reduced to a mewling cry. Basiritz gazed on the proceedings with a strange, horrified expression. Yet the Marine looked strangely pleased, as if he'd just squashed some large and repellent insect. Cut the audio feed from this room, Zai said to the wall. No more contact with this prisoner. Sir, Hobbs asked. She may indeed know Imperial secrets, Hobbs. It's up to us to guard them. Hobbs reached out a hand and touched the woman's neck. She felt for a pulse. They have no hearts, Hobbs, Zai said. Not the beating kind, anyway. The executive officer nodded. The skin was room temperature. She remembered that Rick's commandos were generally cold-blooded to prevent thermal imaging. What a compromised human being. Come away from there, Zai ordered softly. Hobbs stood and retreated. The Rixwoman moved, turning her head slowly. Wait, she croaked. For God's sake, silence, woman, Zai pleaded. Herd shook her head. No secrets, just a question. Captain Zai looked at Hobbs, lost for a moment. The initiate lay on the ground, head in hands and beyond hearing, but Basiritz stood ready with the other remote. The executive officer turned to the prisoner, knelt again. "What is it, Hurd?" The commando took a few breaths, swallowing as if to wet her mouth. When she spoke, the words were tortured. "Is it true that Rana Harta is alive again?" she said. The woman seemed confused, as if she were speaking her own mind after a lifetime of prompting. Her words were halting. "I must see Rana Harta," she said. Zai shook his head. "The honored sister is not to be disturbed, not by anyone." The prisoner nodded. "But she is alive." Hobbs felt a strange sympathy for the Rixwoman, but the captain had no choice. The Emperor's orders were explicit. Not even the other honored dead were allowed to speak with Rana Harta. An adept of the apparatus, the ranking political aboard the Lynx, was posted in her antechamber. "He'll kill her," Hurd said.
"Who will?"
Hobbs asked. "The Emperor," the woman said softly. "Your Emperor fears that she knows his secret, but she doesn't."
"Rick's woman,"
Zai said, "don't speak of secrets."
"Let me see her,"
the woman pleaded, trying to rise from where she lay, but the attempt exhausted her and her head dropped back to the floor.
"My orders are clear," Zai said. "Rana Harta is to be left alone."
He turned away from the prisoner and pulled himself through the door. Hobbs stared at the alien woman for a moment, looking for the signs of truth she might find in a normal human's eyes. But the commando's face had hardened again. Once more she seemed to come from some non-mammalian order, as inscrutable as a tortoise. Hobbs signaled to Basirits to help the initiate out of the cell. What had affected the political like that? She knew that calumny against the Emperor was painful to the most heavily conditioned members of the apparatus, even to lifelong greys like her Vaden captain, but she'd never seen anyone brought to their knees by mere words. Hobbs followed Zai, wondering what to do. The room was sealed behind them and the wall went blank, as impenetrable as stone. As they strode toward the bridge, Zai said, "Rana Harta."
"Sir?"
"The order to keep her isolated. I've never seen such a command. It is very strange to imprison the honored dead." Zai's voice shook as he said it. Hobbs knew that Harta's reanimation was dubious at best, in the eyes of tradition. The politicals occasionally used the symbiont for tactical reasons, to interrogate a traitor or reverse a local assassination that threatened stability, but the official fiction was that all the dead were honored. So it must wound Zai's Vaden soul to restrain a risen woman.
"Perhaps there are secrets that we're not meant to know, eh, Hobbs?"
"Almost certainly, sir," she answered. He stopped short, turned to her. "Do you think we need a weapon against the Emperor, Hobbs?" She knew that anything short of swift denial was treasonous, but she couldn't bring herself to lie.
"I don't know, sir."
She half closed her eyes, her face tense as if awaiting a blow from an angry parent's hand. But Captain Zai said,
"I don't either, Hobbs.
I don't either." He turned away again and they went up to the bridge.
"Senator."
The garden had changed. Arciform sand dunes still dominated the walk to its center, but the scorpions had been replaced with desert flowers. The many fountains still played their tricks of orientation, lovely gravity wells bending the water through playfully twisted paths, but the liquid was now phosphorescent, the drops sparkling like the last glimmers from a firework display. The sinuous and threatening vines Nara Oxum remembered lining the walk had been done away with. Ranks of tulips framed the spiraling path now. Purple and black, their petals were variegated with red lines caused, she remembered, by a virus. They were quite beautiful, though. Senator Oxum wondered if these changes to the Emperor's garden were part of some weekly redecoration, or if the light-hearted touches were a response to war, a curative for the sovereign's cares. The short journey through the garden certainly seemed less threatening now. Oxum shook her head, realizing that her own assurance had nothing to do with the flowers or sparkling waters. She was simply no longer intimidated by the imperial mystique. The dead man waited for her at the center.
"Counselor,"
he greeted her.
"Good day, sire."
"Please be seated, Senator Oxum."
Oxum sat in the floating chair. It seemed to remember her, adapting to her shape more quickly than it had the first time she'd come to the Diamond Palace. It was strange to meet the Sovereign again outside the presence of the War Council. The precisely balanced tensions of that group had become so familiar, their range of emotional reactions so predictable.
Oxum felt a sense of dislocation. Perhaps that was why the Emperor had reconfigured his garden to put her subtly ill at ease. A cat leaped into her lap, startling her. The creature was the color of gray ash, with an apricot-colored mask and white paws. Oxum ran her hand along its back, feeling with quiet distaste the ridges of the symbiont.
"Does it have a name, sire?" she asked.
"Alexander."
"He seeks new worlds to conquer, then?"
The Emperor smiled wanly.
"Perhaps."
She could see the emotions in the dead man clearly. Anxiety, tempered with the confidence of a well-laid plan. Oxum had set her apathy bracelet perilously low, but here, shut off from the raging city, her sensitivity was bright. She remembered Roger Niles's warnings and determined that she would make no mistakes today.
"To what do I owe this honor, Your Majesty?"
The Sovereign reached under his chair. He produced a small human skull, turned so that its eye socket stared at her. Oxum stiffened slightly, and the little beast on her lap betrayed her reaction with wide-eyed annoyance at the motion.
"Forgive me, Senator," the Sovereign apologized.
"I am your servant, Majesty." Oxum stealthily jabbed the cat with a fingernail, but it simply purred. She regarded the skull. At first, it seemed to be that of a child, but the cheekbones jutted ahead of the brow, and the teeth were arrayed in an uncorrected, pre-technology jumble. Along with the sloping forehead, these characteristics suggested the diminutive skull of an ancient hominid adult.
"Another history lesson, sire?"
"An illustrative example, Senator." He rotated the skull in his hand, tipped it to face him as if he were going to play Hamlet. Now its top was to Oxum, and she saw the holes. There were four of them in a rectangle, each a few centimeters across, the two closer to the front much larger. Old cracks emanated from the holes. Only a sealant of gleaming, transparent plastic kept the skull from crumbling in the Emperor's hand. Nara swallowed. This example might be a grim one.
"Some ancient form of execution, sire?"
He shook his head. Another cat appeared from among the tulips and wound between the legs of her chair, then disappeared.
"Just an old story for those who can read it."
"I'm afraid I cannot, liege."
"This creature, one of our honored ancestors, lived on the African continent of Earth Prime."
"In Egypt?"
"Farther south," he corrected. "Before there were nations, at the edge of humanity's existence when tools were first emerging."
Oxum nodded. This skull was old indeed. What a long, strange journey it had taken to wind up here in this dead man's hand.
"They lived in darkness, without language or fire. No agriculture, of course. Her people had no rudiments of civilization. They had no writing or spoken language."
"What did they eat, sire?"
"Wild plants from the ground. Distasteful."
"I've eaten wild plants, sire."
"Basthold has a primeval charm."
"It did when I left it." The Sovereign turned the skull to face her.
"She and her people lived in lava funnel caves, massive and deep, extensive enough to support their own food web. Our ancestors had a stable and protected niche. We would be there still if they hadn't been driven outward into the sun."
Oxum's eyes narrowed as she looked at the holes again.
"The teeth of a predator, Your Majesty?" "Dinophilus, extinct long before the diaspora."
The Senator took a deep breath, realizing that the Emperor had returned to his favorite theme.
"I take it, sire, that this animal is one of the great cats."
Until a few years ago, Oxum had always assumed the creatures legendary, created by the apparatus at an imperial whim. But the imperial zoo here on home held a small inbred family of lions that were generally believed to be natural. Awful beasts from a childhood nightmare, four times the size of any predator on primeval Vasthold. The Emperor nodded happily.
"A creature more than 2 meters long, when humans stood under 1.5 meters. It possessed so-called false saber teeth, knives in its mouth."
The Emperor of the 80 worlds made a claw of 4 fingers with his right hand and plunged them into the holes. Oxum removed her hand from the purring creature on her lap.
"The great cats lived deeper in the caves than our ancestors, in the absolute darkness beyond the human's twilight domain."
"They attacked from behind, apparently, sire." He nodded, lifting the skull with his rapacious fingers, so that its empty eyes stared at her again. They grasped the heads of their victims with their jaws, penetrating the brain and killing instantly. Then they dragged the body back into the darkness. "And this danger drove us out of the caves, Your Majesty?" "Exactly," he agreed with flashing eyes. "But don't think of these cats simply as some evolutionary pressure. This wasn't mere natural selection. This was terror. The saber-tooths were utterly silent, invisible in the darkness. It's possible that no human ever clearly saw one. They were original nightmare buried deep in our species' psyche. They were death itself. This is the mark of the old enemy." Oxum looked down at the cat on her lap. She offered it a finger, which it licked once with its raspy tongue. The beast made a small noise in its throat and continued to purr, absolutely content. "I see your love of felines has a darker side, sire." "Of course, Senator. Their contributions to humanity, though always essential, haven't always been pretty. Imagine being a predated species, Nara. At any moment, a family member, a lover, a friend might be hauled away screaming to die." "Like being always at war," she said. "And always on the front lines. But from this enemy came the necessity to evolve. We were defenseless against this beast until we developed group cooperation, tools, and finally, the only useful weapon, fire. The terror is what brought humanity up," Nara Oxum said, then realized it at last. "Perhaps you are pro-death too, sire." "Perhaps. The council faces another difficult decision." She took a deep breath. Was the Emperor contemplating another genocide already? "Sire, shouldn't this be raised before the entire war council?" The dead sovereign narrowed his eyes. "Senator Oxum, the war council is not a parliament of equals. I have enjoined 12 such councils over the last 1600 years, and in each of them one counselor has arisen from among the others." Her eyes widened. "Flattery from the Emperor?" "I am your servant, sire." "Don't contest with me, Senator. You are nothing of the kind. You are the force that has risen up to balance my power, a natural occurrence in the evolution of this war." Oxum ordered herself to relax, trying to see into the man's mind. There was more in his words than flattery. She spoke carefully. "I agree, Your Majesty, that the Council has achieved a balance now." He nodded. "That is its purpose, to be a microcosm of the risen empire. It must possess two parts, equal parts. But there are times when we must act together, you and I." She realized that the Emperor had taken the first person singular. He had dropped the imperial we for plainer speech. The garden darkened and the lynx's war prize appeared in synesthesia. "Our elevated hero, Laurent Zai, has concerns about this Rick's artifact," the sovereign said. "He believes it contains some sort of ghost of the Legia's compound mind."
"A ghost, sire?"
"A doppelganger. A copy transmitted from Legia's. Captain Zai has been rather convincing on this point. If he's right, the object is even more dangerous than the mind that occupied Legia's. It contains all our secrets. And now it has a body as well."
"Lucky then that the good captain has captured it."
"We hope so. But the powers of this thing are unknown. It can change itself, Senator, at the lowest level of matter. Zai's journey to home will take almost 2 subjective years, 10 absolute. We don't know what tests the Lynx may face over that length of time."
Senator Oxum frowned. The official reports that the Council had received about the object had couched their conclusions in very speculative language. Oxum wished that she could retain outside scientific counsel, but the reports were wrapped in the 100-year rule. She couldn't even access them outside the council chamber.
"In fact," the Emperor continued, "it may be that the Lynx cannot control the object."
"Control it, sire?"
"The apparatist representatives on board the Lynx believe that the object may be exerting an influence. The thing is trying to subvert Zai's crew. There is grave danger."
What was the Emperor saying? Her empathy flared, and Oxum saw a bright shape in the Emperor's mind, a point coming to focus, the culmination of a plan.
"Sire, aren't there escort craft heading to rendezvous with Zai now?" she asked.
Two smaller vessels had set out for Legia's when the incursion began. They were now altering their paths, angling in behind the Lynx as it headed back toward home.
The Sovereign nodded.
Exactly. They will keep a greater distance from the object than the Lynx, and they will be under Imperial writ, outside of the usual chain of command.
She saw it in his mind, the cold point of closure. Victory. Revenge.
What are their orders, sire?
They are fabricating several high-yield nuclear drones. If the need comes, they will destroy the object and the Lynx in a surprise attack.
Nara Oxen felt blindness creep into the edges of her vision, felt her own emotions rise, anger and desperation. She knew finally that the Sovereign wouldn't rest until Laurent Zai was dead.
Sire, only if the need becomes immediate, Senator. I will make the final decision. I alone will take responsibility.
The first person singular again.
Shouldn't the Council discuss...
My oath is to protect the 80 worlds, Senator. Captain Zai's warning is clear in this matter. This object represents a great threat to the Empire, even to humanity itself.
She swallowed. The dead man was hanging Laurent with his own words. He would use them later to justify his decision. Now that he had warned her, the Emperor could even claim that he had consulted with his counselors before emergency action. Although he couldn't depopulate a world without the political cover of a war council vote, the Sovereign could certainly order a single frigate destroyed. The people would remember that the Emperor had pardoned Zai. Making him a martyr would maintain a certain symmetry.
I know you will keep this information confidential, Senator. The 100-year rule still applies, of course, to this conversation.
Of course, Your Majesty.
The cat leaped from her lap and crossed to rub itself against the Emperor's legs. Nara Oxum rose, her mind numbed by the depth of the Sovereign's hunger for revenge against Laurent. She forced herself to look again into the arid space of his emotions, searching for what he feared so much. But there was nothing there but satisfaction. After the rituals of parting, as she walked through the obscenely gilded garden, Nara's mind rang with one imperative. She had to warn Laurent. The Lynx could handle 2 escort craft, provided her captain was wary. But if he assumed they were friendly, they could overwhelm the frigate with a single stroke. Then, as her eyes traced a swath of red flowers decorating an inverted sand dune, Oxum saw it, the shape hidden in the Emperor's satisfaction. It grew clearer with every step away from his icy presence. This was the trap. This was the mistake of which Niles had warned her. It had nothing to do with Laurent Zai. The Emperor wanted her, Nara Oxum. He had somehow learned of their relationship, their previous communication. He knew that she would warn Zai. And, of course, he was right. There was no choice but to walk into this trap, eyes open. It was the only way to save her lover.
Captain.
Laurent Zai stood at the extreme of the observation blister. He looked up at the object, its shape ominously black this far from the Legius sun. It boiled like a dark cloud presaging a storm. According to the DA staff assigned to monitor its movements, it had grown gradually more active over the last few weeks. Its attempts to signal the Lynx had grown in number and subtlety. There were signs scrawled huge upon its surface. Old codes flashed at obscure frequencies, cryptic phrases in local Legius dialects that somehow made their way into the ship's internal channels. It was all the Lynx's AI could do to forestall the mind's attempts at communication. Finally, Zai had been forced to cut off all but the crudest level of sensor scrutiny of the object. The Lynx had shut its ears. The apparatus had demanded it. Ever since the Rix prisoner had attempted to deliver Alexander's message, His Majesty's representatives had behaved as if they were victorious boarders on a captured enemy ship. Their watchful gaze seemed to penetrate every deck of the Lynx. It was all Exo Hobbs could do to track the various bugs that the apparatus had placed in the ship's functions. This invasion of his ship appalled Zai, but he was powerless against the imperative of an Imperial writ, the scope of which seemed to expand daily. Adept Trevum had sealed up the Rix prisoner's cell as tight as a tomb, and posted an apparatus guard with her at all times. The Adept had also taken personal control over the Lynx's external communications. Every outgoing message required her approval now. And, of course, Trevum had commanded that the frigate blind itself from any and all signs emanating from the object. Of course, there were rumors. Some crew thought they knew what the Rix artifact was trying to say.
But the stories were contradictory and absurd, just the chatter of a bored crew. Exo Hobbs had even detected a rumor that the suicide of Data Master Kax a few weeks ago had been related to a message from the object that he had deciphered. But the theory conveniently ignored the fact the man's immune system had rejected his artificial eyes. A lifelong data analyst, he had simply gone mad from blindness. Zai touched the plastic membrane between himself and the void, feeling the cold on the other side. He wondered what weapon the object had offered him. Then he pushed the disloyal thoughts aside and turned to his more important business here. A senatorial missive awaited his attention. From Nara Oxum, His Majesty's representative from Vasthold. August and luminous, the message hovered against the blackness of space, its security icon slowly coiling around themselves like tree snakes crowding a branch. He opened it. Zai smiled as his lover's words appeared. He imagined her voice. "Laurent," it read, "I wish I could start tenderly, but instead I have to warn you of danger." Zai blinked his eyes and shook his head at this beginning. All his life he had been taught that Warcraft brought meaning and order to existence, but this conflict with the Ricks despoiled everything it touched. He continued. "The ships sent to rendezvous with the Lynx are governed by two sets of orders. The open dictate is to escort you here to home in safety, but there is also an Imperial writ carried by a few officers. It can be triggered by a single word from the Emperor. If he gives the command, the task force is to destroy your ship and the war prize in a surprise attack." Laurent Zai straightened. It was just as the Rixwoman had said. The Emperor wanted to destroy him, the Lynx, and the object. The dead man's hunger for revenge was insatiable. What was he hiding? Zai's anger quickly turned to concern, however. This was confidential intelligence data from outside the chain of command, from the War Council itself. "What have you done, Nara?" he whispered, his heart sinking. "Supposedly, the Emperor will only invoke the writ if the object threatens the Empire. But I have felt... I know that he intends to kill you all. I've been close to the Emperor since joining the Council, and I can read him now." Of course, Nara had used her empathy on the man. As Zai continued, the realization dawned that Nara's ability had doomed her. She had broken the 100-year rule. "He's terribly afraid of something, Laurent. Something that the Rick's mind knows. Something that it discovered on Legius." The words of his lover echoing those of the Rixwoman sent a chill through Zai. "He'll go to any length to prevent this knowledge from reaching the rest of the Empire, Laurent. I've seen it myself. He even pressed the War Council to approve a genocide. The apparatus was ready to release a nuclear attack on Legius 15 with dirty weapons. They would have killed hundreds of millions just to destroy the compound mind." Zai closed his eyes. If Nara was right, then the Rixwoman had told the truth. "He'll kill you, Laurent. The Emperor so fears the mind, he would destroy a world." Laurent Zai nodded slowly, straightening as if a weight were lifting from him. "Take care, beloved. Return to me." Captain Zai nodded again as the missive refolded itself, disappearing to a bright mote of synesthesia against the void. Suddenly, a wave of nausea struck him, and he had to reach out one hand to the blister's wall to hold himself upright. The plastic felt reassuringly solid and cold. Real. Still, it was painful. The last shreds of Vaden loyalty were passing from him. The Emperor had designed to destroy one of the 80 worlds. Zai remembered the catechisms of his childhood. The old relationship between the Emperor and Vader had been formed after the Vaden founders had fled their ruined previous home. "No killing of worlds," the compact read. And now the Sovereign had broken it. Through his nausea, Zai saw an icon blinking in the lower corner of Nara's folded message. One of Hobbs's telltales indicating that this message had gone through the Adept's hands. "Damn," he whispered. He'd assumed that the document was secure. It carried senatorial privilege with the full protection of the Pale, but the Adept's writ had somehow opened it. Nara Oxum would be found out now. The Emperor would know that she had warned him. The final wave of nausea lasted only a few seconds, then Zai felt ready. He took the slow, measured breaths of a Vaden warrior. He turned from the blackness of space and strode from the blister, glad to hear the ring of his boots on hard metal. He was smiling. Strange that such danger should lighten his soul. But he felt sure and powerful.